Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Today's episode is brought to you by the financial support of our listeners, and I want to thank specifically Derek for his support. We'll be sending along access to our premium site, which gives you access to all the extras we do. We had some good ones this month with Ralph Richardson, William Johnstone, and Paul Dubov. And you can support the show at support.greatdetectives.net. Well, I mentioned earlier in the week, in 2 weeks, we're going to go ahead and switch to Johnny Dollar first, but we'll finish off Nightmare for Night first. So now it's time for Nightmare for Night Part 3.
Carter Brown, Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense. Based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
I was walking into it with my eyes open. Me, Nicky Knight, the smart private eye. Call me Sir Lancelot, all set to storm the wicked prince's castle and rescue the beautiful captive maiden. Only instead of riding my brave steed with my trusty sword, I rode a Buick Special beside a two-time fraud, Louis Desprez, alias Louis Katz. But this was the only way I could see of finding out what the catch was. We parked the car off the road about a quarter of a mile from the house and cat-footed it up to the wall at the back of the building.
You think this is the best place, Knight?
Yeah. The way I figure it, there's an even chance that Blanc, the guard on the gate, sleeps in the little gatehouse.
Yes, that is reasonable.
So if we get over the wall here, we've got a chance of getting away with it. Uh-huh. I'll go first. You give me a push-up, and then I'll give you a pull.
Are you ready?
Ready?
Yes.
Okay, here, go! I'm set. You jump, and I'll grab you.
Here I come.
Grab my arm. That's it. Up.
Good work, my friend. Now down to the garden, eh?
Yeah. Let's go. Now, quiet now.
Where are we going, eh?
Back door.
What if it is locked?
I got a little gadget with me that's pretty useful for this sort of emergency.
You have your gun ready?
Of course. Why that Hassan flicks a knife about, I'm not taking risks.
I too.
Hold it.
We are here.
Uh-huh.
You will unpick the lock now, eh?
No. Lesson one in the private eye manual. Always test the door before trying to pick it. You never know, it might be open. Well, how do you know? It is.
Piece of luck.
Yeah, I wonder. This is the kitchen. That door opens on the hall. Come on.
The light. There is a light under that door ahead.
Yeah.
Who lives in there?
The prince when he's home.
Perhaps he has returned. You just go and see him.
Don't be crazy. It's a girl we're after.
But I am also after the prince.
Louis!
What? Who dares to disturb me? Who are you?
Your executioner! So much for His Highness Al-Zaman.
What did you do that for?
It's just payment.
Now we go upstairs to find Marie.
Correction, please. Not we. Me! I prefer to go the rest of the way alone, pal. You just lie there and rest. I went up the stairs two at a time, dodging from side to side as I came to make a difficult target. Then a large curved sword appeared on the landing. Behind it was Abdul.
The American!
Hello, Abdul. Goodbye. As he came toppling down the stairs, I pressed back against the wall and then ran for the door to the harem. I dragged it open and found myself face to face with a dark-eyed beauty with small curls and sweet curves.
Who? What do you want?
Are you Marie Despray?
Yes.
And I've come to take you home.
Take me? What kind of a trick is this?
No trick. The prince is dead, Abdul is dead. And if we don't get out of here fast, we'll qualify for the quartet. Now come on! How do you feel now?
I do not quite know. I'm still dizzy from the haste.
Oh, I'm sorry about that, Marie. About the rough treatment getting over the wall, but a skinned knee is better than a punctured hide.
Oh, I do not mind. I am more than grateful.
I kept waiting for Hassan to come yelling after us. You know, that's a funny thing.
What?
There was no sign of Hassan. He's the toughest of the lot. Where was he? And where was Haroon? If the prince was back, he should have been, too.
Oh, surely, Nicky, the one thing that matters is that we've got away.
Yeah, that's true enough. I just can't help wondering.
Where are you taking me?
To my apartment first. Tex is there.
Tex? Oh, that's wonderful. I would like to see her again. She was kind.
After that, I'm not sure. The police, probably. You were kidnapped, weren't you?
Oui. On the Riviera last summer. I met Prince Erzaman there. I thought he was horrible from the first. I had proof of it afterwards.
Uh-huh. Have you got a brother named Louis?
No. I'm an only child.
Oh. Does the name Louis Katz mean anything to you?
Oh, the only Louis I ever knew was Louis Malbert. The wretch who tricked me so that I was kidnapped.
Is he tall, dark, gray eyes, and slightly crooked mouth?
Oh, but yes. Yes, that he is.
We're talking about the same Louis.
I don't understand.
Well, it's a long story, honey. And this is no time to tell it.
The car stops?
Yeah, for one very good reason, out of gas. You know, that's strange. This is Louis's car, and there's not enough gas for a two-way trip.
What will you do now?
Well, I'll leave you here and go look for a phone. I'll call Tex and she can bring my car out here and pick us up.
She will leave me. You will leave me alone?
You can have my gun for company. I won't be long.
Oh, please don't be. I'm frightened.
There's no need. You just sit tight. I'll be back as fast as I can. I trudged along up the road for half a mile before I found a house and an irate farmer in a nightshirt whose bad temper disappeared when I waved a couple of five spots under his nose. He eventually led me to the phone and I dialed my apartment. Tex?
Oh, Nicky.
Relax, honey. Everything's okay.
Oh, thank heavens. I've been sitting here going quietly crazy.
Now, I've got Marie with me, but we run out of gas. Will you bring the car out and pick us up?
Oh, sure. Just give me the directions.
Tex, what's the matter?
Nicky, the door's opening. There's somebody coming inside the apartment.
Tex, are you all right?
No,
Tex! Tex! Hello! Who's that?
This is Haroon. We have your American girl. She is quite safe at the moment. She may have a headache when she wakes up, but it will pass.
If you hurt her...
Keep calm, Mr. Knight. No one will be hurt so long as you are sensible.
What do you mean by that?
It is quite simple. You have a girl. We have a girl. You want the one we have. We want the one you have.
I don't get it.
I think you do. We want Marie Despray back. If you want to see your friend Tex alive, you will return to us the French girl. If not, Hassan is very anxious to practice some of his peculiar talents. Hello? Mr. Knight, are you still there?
Yeah. I'm still here.
The exchange will be made at 9 tonight. You have my word that the American girl will not be harmed in any way before then. We will meet you at the crossroads on the main highway 10 miles north of the house. Is that clear?
It's clear.
Till 9, then, Mr. Knight.
I put the receiver down and just stood looking at it. I felt as though I'd been kicked in the stomach by a specially vicious mule. The thought of Tex and that dagger-happy Hassan was the stuff that nightmares were made of. Then I went back to the old farmer and found he had some spare petrol. Bought it from him, and half an hour later the car was ready to move again. Then I told Marie what had happened. She sat staring ahead of her for a few minutes, then turned to me.
Of course, Nicky. You must take me back.
No. There must be another way.
But they are very thorough. There will be no other way.
I tell you, there must be. We can't just...
Have you gone mad?
No, I just had an idea. Where do you think they'll take Tex?
Back to the house, I suppose.
If you were Haroon, where would be the last place you'd expect to find us, you and me?
What do you mean, go back to the house now?
Why not? There's only Louis and Blanc, the guy from the gate. I think I can take care of them. Then we sit tight and wait for Haroon and Hassan to bring Tex along. They won't suspect a thing. They'll walk through the door straight into my gun.
It is very audacious.
And that's the way wars are won, baby.
Oh, very well. It is a better way than to surrender tamely.
Oh, that's my girl. Hold on to your yashmak. Here we go. Keep beside me, Marie.
I'm trying, but my knees. Oh, cats.
Yeah, sure. If I ever have to get into this place again, I'm not going over that wall. I'll bring a couple of sticks of dynamite and blow it down.
Oh, it's very quiet. What is sound from the house?
No. Be careful now. We're almost at the door. Still open.
Is that not strange?
Yeah. Come on, quiet as you can.
Welcome back, Mr. Knight. Don't move, Knight, or the girl gets a bullet. Switch the light on, Blanc.
Well, looks like we got a reception committee.
Exactly, Mr. Knight. Drop your gun, please. Thank you. We counted on your being a clever man, Mr. Knight. If you had not been, we might have been in trouble. But we had to have a clever man, one who would react the right way, and we got you.
React the right way? So the whole thing was a plant, huh?
Yes, Mr. Knight, the whole thing. A perfectly planned trap. A chess game in excelsis, with you as the pawn.
What's the next move?
The next move is to wait, Mr. Knight, for the prince to arrive.
The prince? But of course, Haroon is the prince now.
Precisely. And he will hand you over to the police for the murder of his brother.
Welcome back. I'm always a little reminded of the... Battle of Wits scene from Princess Bride, whenever you see a situation like that with two people trying to outthink each other. Though I sensed it was coming. Well, now at least most everything is pretty clear. The question will be, how will our hard-boiled hero get out of this mess? You'll have to join us back here next week for the finale of Nightmare for Night. Now, speaking of finales, it's time for the Amy Bradshaw Matter, Part 5.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Sonny Dollar.
It's Amy Bradshaw, Johnny.
Amy, it's 1 a.m. Anything the matter?
Yes, can you come over right away?
Sure, your apartment?
No, I'm in my dressing room at the Criterion Theater.
At 1 o'clock in the... Amy, there's a policeman assigned to you. Is he with you?
No, I went out the back way. I came over here alone.
But why? He's supposed to be protecting you.
Johnny, I can't explain now, but I think I finally know who's been trying to kill me. I want to talk to you right away over here. Hurry. Please hurry.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. New York City, expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Home Office, Northwestern Indemnity Alliance, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Amy Bradshaw matter. Expense account item 12, $5. Taxi from my hotel to the Criterion Theater on West 44th. $2 for the fare, $3 for getting me there in 5 minutes. Amy had sounded plenty scared over the phone. The cab skidded to a stop in front. I caught a glimpse of somebody at the other corner of the theater. It looked like Porter Kane. I couldn't be sure, and I didn't have time to find out right now. Backstage, it was quite dark, and I had to feel my way through some... The shot came from the direction of Amy's dressing room. Mike Pomeroy, her agent, was lying on the floor, dead. There was a gun on the floor, too, just inside the door.
Johnny! Oh, Johnny!
What happened, Amy? Amy, stop it! Tell me what happened.
The door!
Door?
The shot, it came from the door!
I ran outside the dressing room, across the stage, into the alley. No one in sight. Back inside, I found a light switch. So I phoned Al Centella at police headquarters, told him what had happened. Amy was quieter now.
Johnny.
Amy, look. Look, I know it's tough for you to talk right now, but you've got to try and tell me.
I know. A little after midnight, Mike called me at my apartment. He said he wanted to talk to me about something important. His office is nearby, and he asked me to meet him here in my dressing room. So I came over right away.
Go on.
Mike and I started talking. Suddenly I saw the door opening a crack. A hand with a gun. Mike. Mike!
Easy, easy.
Mike saw it too. He dove in between me and the door.
And collected the slug.
He fell against the door and it slammed on the hand. Gun dropped, and the next thing I remember, you were in the room.
You didn't see who was holding the gun?
No, just the hand.
Amy.
And there was something on one of the fingers that I recognized.
A large signet ring?
Yes.
Yeah. It belonged to the guy out on the sidewalk, Porter Kane.
We will continue with the Bradshaw matter in a moment.
Friends, how'd you like to thrill your favorite youngster with some of the most exciting toys of the year? Picture the breathless excitement of any child surrounded by 6 gaily colored balloon-like giant animals up to 3 feet long, and all for the low, low price of just $1. Now, first you get Bounceau the Clown with round pot belly and funny nose. Next comes Hoppy the Australian Kangaroo. Third, there's Roscoe the Roller Skating Bear. He's 2 feet tall and looks almost like real. Fourth, there's Whitey the Fat Indoor Snowman. And fifth, Mortimer the Giant Mouse, 18 inches long and sure to scare the whiskers off any cat. That's 5 different giant animals. But now, hold your breath for the most sensational toy of all, the star of the whole Christmas season, the Jolly Giant Talking Santa Claus, guaranteed to make everybody's Christmas a merrier one. He's a big roly-poly happy Santa. He stands erect on 2 legs, is actually over 3 feet tall and 32 inches around. Best of all, he actually talks. Just pull the tape and he says, Merry Christmas for all to hear. He's the biggest, merriest, talkingest Santa ever. Sure to please your youngsters and spread good cheer. Yes, Giant Santa proves there really is a Santa Claus. That's a total of 6 giant animals made of brightly colored, preformed, sturdy latex which the kids can easily inflate. And the cost... Just $1, not for each, just $1 for all six of these lovable giants who'll turn your home into a circus parade. And here's a surprise. Mail your order today and you'll also receive absolutely free Peter the Rabbit, actually over 2 feet tall with big red ears almost 9 inches long. But you must send now. Rush $1 plus 10 cents for packing and mailing for each set you want to Giant Animals, Box 1918, Grand Central Station, New York City. If not delighted with every one of your seven giant animals, return them to the Super Animals Company for a full refund. But keep the giant talking Santa as our gift. Order now. Supplies are limited. Rush $1 and 10 cents for packing and mailing for each set in cash, check, or money order to Giant Animals, Box 1918, Grand Central Station, New York City. That's $1 plus 10 cents with your name and address. Mail to Giant Animals, Box 1918. That's Box 1918, Grand Central Station, New York City. Giant Animals, Box 1918, Box 1918, Grand Central Station, New York City.
Lieutenant Centella arrived at Amy's dressing room, and Amy repeated her story to him. He sent a couple of his boys out to pick up Porter Kane. Alan, Amy, and I went down to headquarters. We left her in one room while we went into another to question Kane, who'd been picked up at his apartment.
See here, Lieutenant, I don't know what this is all about, but I certainly object to being routed out.
Just hold it, Kane. You know why you're down here.
I certainly do not.
You don't know that Mike Pomeroy's dead, eh?
Amy's agent? Really?
Really.
Well, I never did like that chap. Quite an insensitive person.
Well, he's real insensitive now, Kane. He's dead.
How did it happen?
Mike was shot by mistake. The real target was Amy.
Good heavens, no.
When's the last time you saw Amy?
The night before last. I spoke to her briefly after the show.
You haven't talked to her on the telephone?
No.
You're lying.
Now, see here,
Dollar. You phoned her at her apartment about 11 p.m. I was there.
All right. I did telephone her. I suggested she meet me somewhere. I told her I'd wait for her outside her apartment.
Go on.
I saw her come out later by the alley, so I followed her to the theater, thinking she meant for us to talk there. But then I heard a shot.
So you admit being in the vicinity?
Well, yes, but I definitely did not go into the theater.
Didn't you? Kane, Amy got a look at the hand holding the gun. There was a ring on one of the fingers.
Ring?
Your ring.
She's completely mistaken.
That's a very distinctive ring. It's not one that anybody be mistaken about.
See here, Lieutenant, all of this wild supposition is based on the assumption that I had a motive for wanting to kill Amy.
You told me what your motive was when I talked to you last evening in your apartment.
What do you mean?
I asked you what you'd do if you wanted something for your collection and couldn't get it. You told me a story about what happened when you were just a kid 9 years old.
But I say
another kid had a lollipop you wanted. He wouldn't give it to you, so you smashed it. And that's what you were trying to do tonight in Amy's dressing room. You couldn't have her, so you tried to smash her. There wasn't much point in my hanging around. So I got Al Centella's permission to take Amy back to her apartment. We could wait there for any new developments. Amy didn't say a word all the way. When we got there, she sat in a chair staring at the wall. When she finally spoke, it was more like she was talking to herself.
He's dead.
Amy.
He's dead because of me.
Stop talking that way. Mike Pomeroy jumped in the way of a bullet. If he hadn't, you'd be dead.
Would have been better that way.
Stop it, Amy.
Johnny.
Yeah.
I think.
You think what? Oh, just a minute. I'll get it. It was Al Centella down at police headquarters. When he finished talking, I didn't say anything. There wasn't anything to say. After I hung up, I stood there a moment, staring out the window. It had started to rain. I felt old and tired and empty and sick. I went back into the other room again. Amy was sitting there, looking at me.
Johnny?
Yeah, Amy?
Was that call for me?
No.
Who was it?
Lieutenant Centella.
Oh.
The gun that killed Mike Pomeroy. There were no fingerprints on it. You said you saw a bare hand with a ring on it holding the gun. A bare hand would have left fingerprints. You killed him, didn't you?
Yes, Johnny.
The attempts on your life, you faked them, didn't you, to convince people you were in danger so you could kill Pomeroy and we'd think the shot was intended for you. Why, Amy?
You know why.
Yeah, I guess so. You loved Mike. You knew he was growing away from you.
Very fast.
You saw him get interested in a younger actress. You knew she was taking your place with him.
To Mike, I was dead. I couldn't stand that. I really couldn't. So I started making it look like I was in danger. It wasn't very hard, Johnny. I'm a good actress.
Yeah.
After a while, I almost began to believe I was in danger. Something was after me. It was hunting me. It finally caught up with me, and I did what I did. Which of us is the hunted, Johnny? And which is the hunted?
Amy.
Yes.
I think one of Lieutenant Centella's men is waiting for you out in the hall.
All right. Just one thing, Johnny.
What is it?
I'll need something now. Something. Don't forget me, Johnny. Give me that.
That you can count on, Amy. She walked out of the room, and she didn't look back. I'm glad she didn't. Expense account item 13, $16.50. Transportation and incidentals from New York back to Hartford. Expense account total, $185.20. End of account, end of report. Remarks? Amy repeated her confession to Lieutenant Centella. Her trial's coming up soon. Sweet case. Well, tomorrow's another day. So they tell me. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Johnny Dollar will return in a moment to tell you about next week's intriguing story.
Friends, send for your set of some of the most exciting toys of the year. 6 giant inflatable toys for only $1, some up to 3 feet tall. You get Bounceo the Happy Clown, Hoppy the Australian Kangaroo, Roscoe the 2 feet long roller skating bear, Whitey the fat indoor snowman, Mortimer the giant mouse 18 inches long, and last but not least, the great giant talking Santa, a roly-poly giant over 3 feet tall and 32 inches around the belly that actually says Merry Christmas out loud when you pull the tape. That's 6 sensational giant toys for only $1, made of sturdy, gaily colored latex that the kids can easily inflate. Send $1 for each set to Giant Animals, Box 1918, Grand Central Station, New York City. And if you order right now, you get Peter the Rabbit over 2 feet tall absolutely free. If not delighted with your giant animals, your money refunded immediately. Order today. You may never hear this offer again. Rush $1 plus 10 cents for packing and mailing and cash, check, or money order to Giant Animals, Box 1918, Grand Central Station, New York City. That's $1 plus 10 cents for each set with your name and address to Giant Animals, Box 1918, Grand Central Station, New York City.
Now, here's our star to tell you about next week's exciting story.
Next week, a case with a great big question mark. Accident? Suicide? Or just plain murder? Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Robert Reif, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Virginia Gregg, Florence Walcott, Don Diamond, Larry Thor, Vic Perrin, and Carlton Young. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Part of me really wanted this to have a better outcome, just to make all of the giant animals commercials worth it. It's somewhat sad that this ends up being all a setup to a really dumb murder plot by Amy Bradshaw. Because not only do you have the gun with no prints, you also have the issue of a powder residue, which if he wasn't wearing gloves, he'd have it. And then trajectory. And the sad part is we do have another week of giant stuffed animals to go through. So, all right. Well, on a more positive note, we do turn to listener comments and feedback. And we begin with a comment from Lori, who says, I am not sure that I really love Bob Bailey's Johnny Dollar, but I do enjoy hearing him since Let George Do It has ended. I always liked his characterization, and I guess I've let that ear spill over into his Johnny Dollar. I keep expecting Brooksy to pop up, and I miss the music from the half-hour Johnny Dollar shows. I have to say it's a somewhat interesting comment, and I guess kind of shows an inner you know an effect of having a program where we played first of all we played Let George Do It first, so people heard Bob Bailey in this other role, and we also heard 150 plus episodes of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, prior to Bob Bailey coming on in the role, which gives some more context. Lori goes on to say, since I've caught up completely with you, I've been going back and listening to some of the other podcasts I used to when there's nothing new on yours, and I find that I miss your little notes at the beginning and end. I even find myself wondering what you would say about a particular episode. Thanks. Well, thanks so much. I appreciate you listening, and glad you enjoy the show. And then we have this comment from Bobby, who says Bob Bailey was the best Johnny Dollar. Well, there you go. A couple of differing opinions. Then Tim emails in a comment on the McCoy. It really is a shame that the McCoy wasn't picked up. It could have been a real blockbuster. It is especially sad because its failure was, at least in part, caused by the communist witch hunt of the 50s catching Howard Duff in its stare. More often than not, charges made by McCarthy's committee proved eventually to be untrue. The process ruined many a promising career in Hollywood. Just for our listeners, I want to kind of clarify a little of the history. McCarthy, whatever you want to say about McCarthy's committee, it didn't have anything to do with goings on in Hollywood. The House Un-American Affairs Committee, American Activities Committee, had a little bit to do with it. McCarthy's committee was in the Senate, and his efforts were much more concerned with infiltration of communists into the federal government. What happened to Howard Duff was actually, at the time that there was this concern going on, an anti-communist newspaper put out a booklet called Red Channels. In it, they implied, but didn't specifically accuse, several members of the Hollywood community of being communists. The damage to Duff's career was pretty short term. If you look at his filmography on IMDb, 1952 and 51 were dry years, but after that, pretty much his movie and television career gets back in line. And I had one listener, Joan, who mentioned the series he starred in with Ida Lupino at the end of the 50s, 1957-58, Mr. Adams and Eve, where he played the lead role, in a hut with a real life wife at the time, Ida Lupino. So his career was not majorly damaged. It was kind of just this one spot at the time that he was auditioning for the McCoy. It was a very brief period for Duff. And he, of course, would go on to recover and would most famously star. He played, of course, Sam Spade, but he played another Sam in all the way into the 1960s with his role on Felony Squad. So long term, this was more a blip on his radar screen than something that ruined his career. So, All right, well, that will actually do it for today. We will be back on Monday with another episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, and then join us back here Friday as we wrap up Nightmare for Night. And tomorrow, we'll be bringing you the lineup. In the meanwhile, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives, and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.